world's on fire, our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know what, why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Hey, pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed on this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Hey, happy March 11th here, man. Crazy day kind of here at Coach Dave live house. You know, I do have a life outside of doing this show, and just grateful every time I get up here and turn on my computer, kick on here my multi-million dollar studio, to see that there are people actually waiting to join. It's just, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Keeps me going. And for those of you who watch consistently, know we have an after show here. Coach Dave has to leave him. As soon as this bell rings at 8 o'clock, I'm out the window. Got an appointment. So excited to be with you. Got a lot going on. Let me jump right in. I'm going to take you. You talk about a left hook coming. I'm going to throw a left hook at you today, but I think it's really, really important. First of all, congratulations to Ray, who's been married. How long, Ray? Spencer, is there a picture you can pull up of Ray? I think there's a.
I got the 7 years.
There's a video. Yeah. Ray sent me a video yesterday. I married him. I was lucky enough to be there.
Yeah.
You know what really amazed me, Ray, in that video is some of the people in there that I haven't seen in like forever. Bradley Dean was in there. Brockhoff was in there. I mean.
Yeah.
Huh? So Jared, I don't know, Spencer, if you can get
John Brockhoff really lit up the party, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, just kidding.
It was good. It was good. So how many years, Ray? Six? Good for you, man.
Seven.
Yep.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Coach.
No, staying married, man. That's something in itself. And hey, Spencer, pull up the Ketterman prayer vigil. I think I sent you that as a standalone email. There's going to be a prayer vigil with Thursday. That would be tomorrow. March 12th, 7:30 p.m. Diana Ketterman's got a special prayer vigil going. There's a link there, a Zoom that you can zoom in and be part of it. And we're going to be there. We're going to encourage all of you folks to be there as well. So, Spence, I don't know how we put this thing in the chat, but stick in the chat for people who want to join it. It's all right there. All right there. So appreciate Diana doing it. Boy, we need prayer, don't we? We need prayer. Wow. I'm gonna take a left turn on you today here, if I could. This is something. I don't know about you guys. Let me give you a real brief history here. I right here in my Bible. I write it in the front of my Bible. The day I was born again, the day I received Jesus, is 1/28. That's my wife's birthday, 1987. I've been a Christian since 1987. I've been in church since 1952. And again, I've said to many of you out there, you've heard it before, I was raised Catholic, nothing against Catholicism. I was raised in a Catholic home. My dad was Catholic. My mom was, she was a mutt. She went to different churches all the time. And for our family to go to church together was really, really rare. Mom rarely went to a Sunday Mass with us. Dad would take all five of the kids and we would go to Mass. And mom would go another. The Bible says a house divided against itself cannot stand. How we even made it is beyond me. And for me, anyway, Christianity, Catholicism, was just kind of rote memory and repetition. But I'm not making, if you're Catholic out there, slow down, all right? I'll talk about the Baptists if you want to. But for me, I learned the rituals, but I didn't really have a relationship with Christ. And on January 28th, 1978, I met Jesus and radically transformed me. As I jokingly say, I did for me what a phone booth did for Clark Kent. I walked into that church and I heard the gospel and I ran to the altar and I was forever changed. And my whole perspective changed and just everything. So going through a series of things that I always realized, as I began to go to church, they began to teach us stuff. And I didn't realize at that time that there were things called different eschatologies or different what's the word I'm looking for? Hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is the study of the Bible. I didn't realize that all the churches didn't believe the same stuff. Am I the only one? Anybody other than that get that? Say that? Yeah, Coach, that was me. I didn't know that if I walked into, remember, this is, I wasn't saved. I didn't know if I walked into a Baptist church, they didn't really believe the same thing the Methodists did. And I didn't realize if I walked into the Methodist church, they didn't really believe the same things the Lutherans did. Then if I walked into a Presbyterian church, they didn't believe, they believed some of the things, but they didn't believe all of the things. And what do we call that? We call that doctrine and theology. And so most of you who are sitting here right now, you have been so trained and programmed in theology from your denominational pastor. But you say, well, Coach, I don't have a denomination. Oh, I know you don't have a denomination. He's non-denominational. Oh, I get it. Non-denominational. So you don't really know what he believes. Right? And somebody give me a thumbs up to say, so I'm with me here, right? Chad told me to stop doing that. Hey, Chad, that's a teaching technique that makes people alert, wakes them back up. Okay, so, hey, give me a thumbs up. The guys and pulls them back into it. So because of that, when I started getting into the Bible, that's when Coach Dave was kind of birthed. When what's the famous saying here? Who told you that? And why should you believe him? And the older I got, and then when I got started doing Coach Dave Live, oh my goodness, I began to dig into things that I had never, ever thought of, never heard. And why? Because every time that I went to church on Sunday, I heard what the pastor wanted to teach me. Now, nothing wrong with that. It would be hard to be a pastor and be in a building with 400 people, and they don't even believe the same thing to begin with. And somebody's dealing with problems with their family, and somebody's dealing with drugs, and somebody's dealing with alcoholism. Somebody's got a lousy. How do you minister in a large area like that? And because that was the scenario or the frame that we all grew up in, Christianity's just kind of become such a mishmash. Remember the old saying, the Bible says it, I believe it, and that settles it. That ain't true, folks. That is not true. The Bible says it, and your pastor interpreted it, and that settles it. Really. So I don't come here, I never come here trying to beat up on anybody's theology or make somebody look bad or anything. Same question I always ask, who told you that and why do you believe it? And everything. Who told you that and why do you believe it? And so I'm going to dig into some stuff here. 66 books of the Bible, although you know, what's the name of that Bible? There's a Bible out there that says it was really 84 of them. Spencer, see if you can find that for me. 84 books in the Bible, really, I think, right?
Ethiopian Bible.
The Ethiopian Bible. The Ethiopian Bible says there were how many? How many books in the Bible in Ethiopia? Folks, I'm not questioning the Bible. Huh? 81 books. Some say 88 books. The Protestant and Catholic Bible has 66 books. Now here, here's the point. Here's where I'm going today, okay? I'm going to show you, I'm going to show you some stuff here that doesn't line up with the 66 books of the Bible. Or wait a minute, maybe expands on the 66 books of the Bible, okay? So I don't want you to walk away from here and say, oh, he's teaching heresy. He's teaching, no. I want you to know right up front that some of the things I'm going to share with you today are not included in those 66 books of the standard Protestant Catholic book, okay? Okay? And even if we were just using all 66 of those books, we wouldn't even agree. We wouldn't even agree because of our denominationalism, okay? So here's where I'm jumping off today. Spencer, pull up Men's Heart, Luke 21. You see it right there, number 1B. Because, you know, there's a lot of talk now about end times, and we're over in the Middle East, blowing up the Middle East. Now we're into war going on over there. And people are so focused on Israel and yada, 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 yada. And they say, there it is, Coach. There it is, the signs of the times. There it is, coaches. Well, so Luke 21 said, and there shall be signs in the sun. Craig talks about that. Craig Mickle talks about that a lot. And in the moon and in the stars. And upon the earth, distress of nations. We're certainly there, aren't we, in the distress of nations? With perplexity. What a word to put in there. What a word to use. The sea and the waves roaring. And men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. By the way, heavens, I believe that would be heavens. Right? Folks, there's something coming. It's just going to cause men's heart to fail. Just seeing it. Is it atomic bombs? Is it missiles? It could be, but I want to take you a different direction here. Because through some of the research that I've done, and we can say this, certainly not established canon in many Bibles. Let me ask you this. When was the last time you heard in your church, ever in any church, a series on return of the Nephilim? And if we are really what we're talking, people everywhere you go talking about the end of days, return. Well, for the end of days, look what's going to happen. Men's hearts are going to fail them for fear. So here's what really kind of ignited me. Okay, I was just kind of scrolling the other day. Pull up number 7. I don't know if you guys know who Jack Hibbs is, but he's a respected pastor. I mean, am I a respected pastor? I don't know. Jack Hibbs, not that one. No. Oh, come on, man. Oh, Spencer, it should be number seven. Yes. Now, this is long. It's 38 minutes. But this is from a respected guy. And look what he did. I'm going to show you just a couple minutes of this. I'm going to put it in the chat. And if you want to follow up with it, go ahead. Are we seeing the coming demonic invasion? Are we in the midst of it right now? Do we believe in demons? Do we believe in fallen angels, which we don't even talk about church? What is it? So because Jack is pretty much a straight shooter, I just wanted to just a couple minutes of Jack Hibbs, and then I'm going to put it in the chat, and you would do well to watch this. Okay, go ahead and play it real quick.
Back. They said, we called the church because we wake up in the morning and all the pictures in our home are turned down on the face except the pictures of her and the baby. Now we think, we got enough information here that this is something paranormal is going on at least. Pastor and I went into the baby's room and we began to pray and ask God to show us what in the world is going on. And that crib began to shake. Have you ever felt
the draft?
He's talking
about a spiritual encounter.
We were hit by a wall.
Move it forward a little bit.
The gods, I'm talking about, of course, God spelled.
Go ahead.
With a little G. But I'm referring to the gods that have always been. The gods of demonism, the gods of the demonic realm that we in the Western world, due to the light of Christianity, have had the opportunity, the joy, the peace, the comfort, the benefit of the gospel going forth. The gospel goes forth and it is a hammer against the gods of the underworld, the demonic deceiving forces that Jesus and the Bible warned us about. That light, the light of God, the representation of the Lord and the Word of God and the power that resides in a Christian by the Holy Spirit drives darkness away. And as darkness diminishes in the Western world and in America and certainly Europe, which is darkened, there will be a rise of demonic activity. And I just want you to process this now as you hear this, not with sensationalism. I will be sharing some sensational things with you, but I promise you that all of it will be rooted in truth. That said,
just move it ahead a little bit. Just move it
it's
ahead.
The return of the anyway. God. Here's the creepy thought. And not the thought. Here's the creepy idea of this. The demon leaves a man. When he leaves a man, he goes and walks through, hangs out in waterless places. Why on earth does the Bible say that? Why did Jesus say that? Finding no rest, it says...
Put it in the chat, okay? Put it in the chat. I don't have enough time today. Put it... Look, if you want your eyes to be open, then you're going to have to do some extra homework, I guess. I promise you this. You can put it at about 1.75 speed and get it, and it is really, really good. Okay, so let's go here, because I want to go to number 4. No, is that where I want to go, Lord? Is that where I want? No. Go to number 3 real quickly. Go to number 3. I'm going to throw a lot of information at you here real quick. We're going to talk about the giants. I found this online. The return of the Nephilim, giants, angels, and the flood. Hey, Here, let me build the premise. They're lying to us, folks. I'm going to show you some evidence here that they have, in fact, discovered multiple giant skeletons. And they've sent them to the Smithsonian, where they have disappeared. Go ahead, 2 minutes.
The Bible says there were giants in the earth, not fairy tale giants, real, terrifying, world-shaking giants, the Nephilim. Who were they? Heroes of old or monsters of legend? And more importantly, where did they go? Because let's be real, if one of them walked into your city today, TikTok would explode. The story starts in the book of Genesis. Angels, known as the Watchers, came down from heaven. They looked at human women and said, wow, and against divine law, they took them as wives. The children of this union were the Nephilim giants with incredible strength, power, at probably a shoe size bigger than your car. Imagine men the size of skyscrapers eating food supplies that would empty Walmart in an hour. Ancient texts describe them as warriors, kings, even tyrants. The Bible calls them mighty men of old, men of renown. Sounds cool, right? Until they started causing chaos. Here's the shocking twist. Many believe the Great Flood wasn't just about humans being wicked. It was about wiping the Nephilim off the face of the earth. God hit the reset button. Boom, end of giants. Here's where it gets juicy. Legends of giants exist everywhere. From the Titans of Greece to the Jotnar of Norse myth to massive skeletons claimed to be found in deserts. Coincidence? Or were all these cultures remembering the same terrifying beings? And let's be honest, if a museum did find a 20-foot skeleton, do you think they'd tell us? Or would it be classified?
You think they'd tell us? They found one?
You could say Area 51. Some say the Nephilim never truly died, that their bloodline survived through ancient kings, rulers, maybe even celebrities today. What if the Nephilim aren't gone? What if they're waiting to return? And imagine that headline. Breaking news. Giants spotted on the freeway. Traffic delayed. Yeah, good luck explaining that one. The Nephilim. Giants. Monsters. Heroes. Lost children of heaven and earth. Were they wiped away forever? Or are they out there hiding in plain sight, waiting for humanity's next chapter? One thing's for sure. This story is far from over. Subscribe and follow.
Okay, so it's cool. So let me. I got to make sure we're tracking the same reason. Why would the Smithsonian, if they have this evidence, I'm going to play a video here in a second. Why would they hide it from us? Come on now, folks. Come on now. Think. What would even two skeleton of giants, what would that do? What would that do from a theological standpoint? Beth Yates gets an A. Ray gets an A minus because it would prove the Bible true. You understand that? If they found evidence, proof of the giants, it would prove the Bible true. And can I be honest with you? Of course I can. I got to quit that habit. Science is godless. Paul, science is godless. Is it not, Paul? Science has become godless. And that's why when you go to a doctor and the doctor wants to prescribe some natural stuff for you to take, the medical association's against it. They're godless, folks. They're godless. It's not natural. Okay, so you get that with me, right? So did you guys know this? Pull up number 5, I think. Wait a minute. No, hang on. Giant cover-up. Play that one. A giant cover-up by the Smithsonian. And Spencer, you can put it at about 1.5 speed. What if these giants did show up? Did you know? Oh my goodness. Go ahead and play it.
What if one of America's most trusted institutions, you know, the Smithsonian, was actually at the heart of a massive century-long conspiracy? A conspiracy to hide a version of history so wild, it would literally rewrite everything we've ever been taught.
Slow down.
Well, that's the unbelievable claim we're digging into today. Giants, pharaohs, and quite literally skeletons in the closet.
And it all kind of starts with this. This isn't from some obscure blog. It's a handwritten note from Abraham Lincoln. He just casually mentions a species of extinct giants whose bones are filling the mounds across America. I mean, think about that. That single sentence from one of the most respected people in history just blows the door wide open to a really incredible story. All right, so let's get right to it. What's the main accusation here? Well, the sources we're looking at claim that for over 100 years, the Smithsonian has been systematically hiding actual physical evidence that completely contradicts our official history. So the whole theory is that the Smithsonian wanted to push this one particular idea, that ancient America was totally isolated from the rest of the world. And to do that, they had to actively suppress any discovery that challenged that story. So for the next few minutes, let's open up this case file and just look at the evidence that's been presented.
First up is the big one, the claim that gets the most attention. The sources present this mountain of evidence for a last race of giants that supposedly once roamed all over North America. And you know, long before the Smithsonian was even a thing, the sources point out that the most famous explorers of the New World were constantly reporting encounters with giants. I mean, you've got Ferdinand Magellan's crew saying they met men so tall they only came up to their waists. Hernando de Soto met a chief, Tuscaloosa, who was a head and shoulders taller than his tallest soldiers. And these weren't just one-off stories. This stuff is all over their diaries. Then you fast forward to the late 1800s and early 1900s, and it's like these old legends just exploded into reality. Newspapers all across the country started publishing these sensational headlines about the discovery of enormous skeletons. Some, like this one, claiming they were up to 18 feet tall. But here's what's really fascinating. A lot of these articles, you can still find them in the Library of Congress archives. They don't just report the find. They very specifically name where these bones are headed, the Smithsonian Institution. Now, this is the crucial point. These accounts aren't just describing really tall people. The sources are consistent about these really unique physical traits. Skulls way larger than ours, double rows of teeth, and very often red hair. And what's wild is that these same details pop up over and over again in Native American legends, which talk about ancient wars fought against a race of red-haired, cannibalistic giants. Real quick, if you're enjoying this video, be sure to like and maybe subscribe to Marginal Mysteries.
Okay.
The theory doesn't stop with giants.
Stop it. Okay, stop. Put it in the chat. This is folks, if you want to know the truth, this is fascinating. Why would the Smithsonian do that? Why would they hide that from us? It's a giant cover-up. Okay, so I did that one. Pull up for me quickly. I'm going to open it up here in a second. Pull up number two, giant history. Pull that one up. I've been up for an hour and a half preparing this stuff, digging through. Are you ready? Hey, folks. Yeah. Bible history. Bible. Raise your hand. Gene Schroeder is going to send you $10 if you ever heard a sermon in your church on Nephilim. Gene, you can keep your money. You won't have to give it, right? If you ever in your church ever heard a sermon on the giants, ever, ever. So giants are mentioned multiple times in the Bible, primarily in the Old Testament, with notable references to the Nephilim, the Rephaim, the Anakim, and Goliath. These are in the Bible. The Nephilim is the earliest mention occurs in Genesis 6, verse 4, describing the Nephilim as the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of men, noted for being mighty men of old, men of renown. Right out of the Bible, boys and girls. And then they hear the Anakim, which was a tribe encountered by the Israelites in Canaan. They're mentioned in Numbers 13:33. Ooh, that's some funny numbers, where the spies report feeling like grasshoppers in their sight. And also in Deuteronomy 1:28 and Deuteronomy 9:2. We could go through all these, but not. Then you hear about the Rephaim, another group of giants referenced in Deuteronomy 2:20 and 21 and Deuteronomy 3:11, including Og, king of Bashan, whose iron bedstead is described as 9 cubits long. How long is a cubit? Anybody know out there real quick? They found this giant's bed 9 cubits long. Somebody's doing that research for me right now. No? Then we find about Goliath in the Philistine Wars. Goliath, the most famous of all, 18 feet. Thank you, Ray. 18 feet. The bed was 18 feet long. Wow. Where am I? Goliath? I got lost it. Goliath, the famous giant from Gath, is described in 1 Samuel as approximately 6 cubits, 9 feet, 9 inches, representing the formidable Philistine opponents. Then there's other references. So, hey, folks, so there's all kinds of, hey, the Bible says it. I believe it. That settles it. Well, really? When's the last time you went to church and you said, you know what we're going to do, folks, for the next couple of weeks? We're going to do a study on the Anakim, the Nephilim, the Rephaim, and why we had to have the flood. You with me? It's good. So I'm going to make a connection here that you ain't going to believe. Pull up number 8. Again, this is just to wet your whistle. Do your own research. Giants in the Bible. This is 4:49. We can watch it all. Did you know every biblical encounter with the giants is explained in this? Go ahead, quickly. Put a 1.5.
It's 30 times, but most Christians only know about Goliath. What if you were told there were entire races of giants that God specifically commanded to be wiped out? And what if some of them might have survived? The truth about biblical giants is far more terrifying than you've been taught. Most people think giants in the Bible were just tall humans. They're wrong. Genesis 6 reveals something happened before the flood that created beings called Nephilim. These weren't normal people. The Hebrew word Nephilim means fallen ones, or those who cause others to fall. But here's where it gets strange. Numbers 13:33 says, "The Israelite spies saw Nephilim in the promised land." Wait, did not the flood kill everyone except Noah's family? So, how were giants still alive after the flood? The Bible gives us clues, but most churches never talk about this mystery. Let's start with the most famous giants that nobody really understands. Genesis 6 verse 4 says something shocking. "The sons of God saw that the daughters of humans were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose." Who were these sons of God? Some say they were the descendants of Seth, but the Hebrew text suggests something darker. These sons of God weren't human. They were divine beings who left their proper place. The result, their children became mighty warriors of old, men of renown. But these weren't heroes. The word Nephilim comes from the Hebrew root Napal, which means to fall violently. These giants were violent, corrupt, and filled the earth with wickedness. They were so evil that God regretted making mankind at all. The book of Enoch, which Jude quotes in the New Testament, gives us more details. It says, "These fallen angels taught humans forbidden knowledge, how to make weapons, how to use makeup, how to read the stars. They corrupted everything God had made pure. Their giant children grew to enormous sizes. Some ancient texts say they were 300 cubits tall. That's over 400 feet. Even if we use the smaller royal cubit, we're talking about beings 15 to 20 foot tall. They ate everything. When food ran out, they started eating humans. So God sent the flood to wipe them out completely. Every giant died. Every Nephilim was destroyed. The bloodline was cut off forever. Or was it? Here's where the problem keeps scholars awake at night. Numbers 13:33 clearly states that the Israelite spies saw Nephilim in Canaan. We saw the Nephilim there. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. How is this possible? The flood killed everything that breathed air. Noah's family were the only humans who survived. So, how were giants still alive after the flood? The Bible gives us clues, but most churches never talk about this mystery. The first giant race Israel encountered in the Promised Land was the Anakim. Their name means long-necked ones, or those who wear necklaces. They were descendants of a man named Anak whose father was Arba. A giant named Arba built the city of Hebron. The Bible calls Arba the greatest man among the Anakim. If he was the biggest giant in a race of giants, imagine how huge this man was. The Anakim were so terrifying that 10 of the 12 Israelite spies refused to enter the Promised Land. These were men who had seen God part the Red Sea. They watched fire come down from heaven. They ate bread that appeared from nowhere every morning. But when they saw the Anakim, they lost all faith. Numbers 13:28 records their exact words. "The people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there." Notice they mention the cities were built to accommodate these giants. We're not talking about normal-sized people living in giant cities. These cities were built by giants for giants. Deuteronomy 9 verse 2 describes them this way. "The people are strong and tall. You know about them and have heard it said. Who can stand up against the Anakites?" This had become a common saying in Israel. Nobody could fight the Anakites and win. But here's what's interesting. The Anakim weren't just one family. They had spread throughout the land and formed three main clans. Keep watching, because Divine Insights Realm is about to reveal which giant bloodlines are mentioned in the New Testament. The Rephaim were another race of giants, but their name reveals something disturbing. Rephaim means the dead ones or the departed spirits. Some scholars believe they were called this because they were so connected to death in the underworld. Genesis 14 mentions them during Abraham's time. They lived in a place called Ashtaroth-Karnaim. King Chedorlaomer defeated them in battle, which means they were already established as a major force in the region. But here's what's interesting. The Anakim weren't just ancient history. They were still around during Israel's conquest of Canaan.
Wow. Hey, pull up for me real quick. Tartaria, because we've talked about this before, right? Tartaria. T-A-R, yeah, you know what it is. Remember, folks? These hidden cities, these huge, huge, huge cities with huge buildings. And then we talk about, go up there top, Wikipedia. Click on that one, Spence, on the right. Mud flood. The mud flood came what? Buried all these cities? They don't know when, set 13th, 19th century? Folks, this is history. This is biblical history. Not talked about at all in our churches. Okay, one more thing, then we'll open it up. Oh, I got two more things. You want to get all the information you ever want, go to number 9. I'm going to get him on the show, Fritz Zimmerman. Fritz Zimmerman, that's it. Google, there it is. Go down second one on the bottom, right there, the funny-looking guy. Yeah, click on that. Here it is, Nephilim Chronicles. Fritz Zimmerman lives in Indiana, and he is the expert on giants here in the Midwest. I'll try to get Fritz on. Oh, just wanted to give you that website. What's the name of his website? It'll come to me. I didn't give it to you. I didn't put that down there. Okay. So I want to make a connection then. Bible says men's hearts failing them for fear for the things coming upon the earth. What would that be? There's Fritz. There it is. Fritz Zimmerman. Click on that. Maybe it'll give you his website. I'm sorry, I don't have that. He's an expert on all the mounds around here. He's the one saying Folks, they're Nephilim mounds. They're Nephilim mounds. I'm right in the middle of them, by the way, right here. Okay. Then, one more thing. Would we be scared if these things were coming back? Our hearts be feeling us for fear. One more. Pull up number 13. You guys remember the giant of Kandahar during the Afghan War? The 13-foot-tall, red-haired giant of Kandahar allegedly killed by soldiers in Afghanistan? Remember that? Is there something going on over in the Middle East other than Israel that's far darker and deeper than what we understand? And if a Bible says my people were destroyed for lack of knowledge, why aren't we hearing about this kind of stuff in our church if these things coming are going to be so bad that men's hearts are going to feel them for fear? One more connection, okay? One more connection. Where is it, Coach? Number six. Laugh if you want. Look out, hikers. This is Ohio. Bigfoot said to be roaming Portage County woods. Huh? When was this? Why, March 9th. March 9th. Are we beginning to see the reemergence? Wow. Now I'm a real conspiracy theorist, aren't I? What do you think? Let me open it up. Somebody's buzzing up my phone. I can get up. Let me get up here. There. Come on in, Ray. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, Spencer, would you mind bringing up Isaiah 13:3?
Folks, this is biblical history. This isn't Hollywood. It's right out of the Bible.
And make it longer than that. I have commanded my sanctified ones. I have also called my mighty ones of mine anger, even them that rejoice in my highness. I'm trying to find the part where it said that his mind says the giants are the mighty ones. They're coming to fulfill God's wrath, often interpreted as Babylonian soldiers. But there's some more proof that, you know, the giants are coming back again on this land. And that's probably what's going to cause men's hearts to feel, right, Coach?
Well, Ray, let's ask ourselves this. Where does a normal, whatever that word means, human being, when they die, where do they go? According to Christian belief, they go either to heaven or they go to hell. And then there are some who believe in purgatory and you go there. So what happens to a giant, half human, half whatever, when they die, which they do, where does that soul go? Where does that soul go? Does it go to hell? Or is it just becomes a disembodied spirit? They have nowhere to go. And so again, come on, body dead. Where's the soul? And the answer to what that would be is, well, it's roaming. It has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And so it's working what? To inhabit and Psalm 2, kings of this earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together. What if the rulers are these supernatural beings that are invading the bodies of people? And we don't even know it.
Yeah.
Don't even know it. Spencer, you just had that. Put up what you just had there, brother, if you would. Fritz Zimmerman's website. Isn't that what you had, Spencer? I'm sorry, I thought you did. He's looking. Come on in, Mel.
Yeah, thanks,
Coach. There it is. There's Fritz Zimmerman on Facebook. Put that in the chat. He's the expert on the Nephilim, the giant mounds, all across Ohio. He has actual photos, bodies that they found. I don't think they could fake photos back then. Maybe they could. Very, very fascinating. Do your own research. Put it in the chat. Come on in, Mel. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks. So some of you know I've been doing some comparison of the Septuagint versus the Masoretic text. The Masoretic text is what we use for all of our modern Bibles. Spencer, if you could go to Genesis 6 and just go to King James, kind of work your way down to verse 4. So you'll notice that in verse 4, it says, there were giants in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men. Okay, now go, Spencer, if you'll go up and now pull up the Septuagint verse, same place, Genesis 6 and Septuagint. It should be there listed alphabetically at the bottom. Not there? Darn. Well, in some of the Bibles, the electronic Bibles, you can find it there. But in the Septuagint, instead of saying, go back to Genesis 6, if you would, please.
So, Mel, I want to freeze you right there a second, because there are people who say, well, that's not the King James Bible, Mel. That's not really the Bible.
Okay, that's fine. But Jesus quoted it, and so did the apostles. So, I mean, I'm reading it. So, I mean, if you look in the New Testament, sometimes if you see the reference, if you go back into your Masoretic text Bible, it's not the same. But if you look at the Septuagint, so I think there's some validity here. But in the Septuagint, instead of using the word when, it's whenever. So that would read then, there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, whenever the sons of God came into the daughters of men, which would indicate that there was more than one incursion.
Yes, sir. And the children became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. And God saw it. Folks, this is in the Bible. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of thought of his heart was only evil. He said, oh man, I regret I made those guys. I'm going to flood them. I'm going to flood them and kill them all. No, I don't know how some of them survived the flood. I can't answer that. But we better open our eyes and understand, my friends, that the spiritual realm is it is more real than this natural realm. It's more real. When the scriptures say that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers, that is real. We wrestle spiritually with these demonic beings, kings of this earth that were created. So I've got to tell you, I was, how old am I now? I'm 71. I was 41 years old in church for 41 years and never heard the first thing about the giants ever. Still haven't. Why? Because pastors don't want to scare people. People want to come to be encouraged. I don't know. This history is so important, especially for those. We live right here. I live right in the middle of it, of these Nephilim mounds. The spirits are disembodied. The spirits are here. Their bodies in the grave. What if those things come back to life? Would that be something that would men's hearts would fail them for fear? I got to tell you, if some 20-foot dude came walking up out of the hills where I am, my heart's going to fail me for fear. That's for sure. But it could be more than that, right? There's a lot of things that could cause our hearts to fear. But how can we ignore this? How can we ignore this so clearly? And certainly we can trust the Smithsonian, can't we? And I got to find this. I couldn't find it this morning. Did you know that Congress passed a law that the only place that cannot be audited is the Smithsonian? Did you know that? Spencer, that would be a Google if you can find that. Google that one and say, the Smithsonian cannot be, what's the word I'm looking for? Smithsonian cannot be investigated, whatever. See if we find it. Well, the Smithsonian is technically a trust instrument of the U.S. and not an executive branch agency to provide oversight. Anyway, trust me on that. Come on in, Craig. I'll dig in this different. I'm not lying. I'm not lying to you.
So, Spencer, can you pull up that last link? And when you pull it up, you'll see an arrow for a little video, which should be the awakening, so people can see it.
Mm.
I think it's to the right. See where it has the three little dots there, Spencer, with the little hands, the hands coming up, and you got the three dots, the top right. I think that's a little video.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. See, I want you to look at that, folks. What's that look like?
Looks like a giant with his arm up and his leg coming out and his foot coming out. That's what it looks like.
Do you know where that's at?
It's on the Mississippi River.
That's National Harbor. That's Washington, D.C.
Oh, geez.
That is directly across the southernmost D.C. boundary stone, Masonic boundary stone. Okay. Now, that's the precipice of why I asked Randy. I said, Randy, I said, you know, this thing's called the awakening of all things. Why is it trying to awake? It's trying to come out of the earth. I said, do you know, Randy, that in St. Louis, the same statue is in St. Louis. The same guy that made that artwork, if you want to call it that, he put one of those in St. Louis.
We went there and staked it, by the way, Craig. We went there. We staked
that. That's the reason why you went, because I went and staked that, okay, when I did Refiner's Fire in Washington, D.C., because I looked at it and I said, well, why is this thing here? What is it representing? What's Washington, D.C.? What does it represent? Why is there a thing called Lady Liberatus that sits on top of the dome of the Capitol?
Mm.
Why is there a Washington Monument, which is the tallest Egyptian obelisk in all of the world? 550 feet above, 111 feet below. Why is that?
So, Craig, if we started talking about this, it proves the Bible to be true. Folks, you have to understand this. It proves the Bible to be true. And they cannot allow that to happen. Now, Craig, what was the one, that awakening that we, when we went out to St. Louis? What was the name of that one?
The same thing. It's the guy, the same guy designed the same statue. He made five of them. And two of them are like metal. One of them is, there's one in New Jersey. And then there's one over, guess where the last one is? Over in Italy. It's in Italy, and it's in the town north of Rome where the Pope goes when they would take over the Vatican, and the Pope needed to go and exit the Vatican and have a place to live. It's in that city.
And of course, we don't even talk about it, right? We don't even talk about it.
Well, the people don't know about it, for one, and then two.
Why don't they, Craig? Why don't they know about it?
Well, I can't answer the question. I mean, I have speculation, but the point being is, you know, what does it represent? Okay. See, we're coming, when you go to Noah's flood, and I try to talk about timelines a lot, and people get, you know, they kind of start yawning. All right. But the flood happened in 1656 because it was the 600th year of Noah's birthday. Oh, by the way, it's the 6-year anniversary of COVID. Well, congratulations, everybody. March 11th, 2020. And
is that right?
I guarantee you it is. And it's also 15 years since the Fukushima earthquake, March 11th of 2011.
So we better hang on today, huh? We better buckle down.
Well, there's a reason why eyes of March are eyes of March. But anyways, the point that I'm trying to say is God works in patterns. And if you go 1656 and you go 88 is a number, new beginnings, times 50, you come to 4,400. Okay, when you add that together, guess what? You're living in the 88th, basically, time of Jubilees of Noah's flood. So why wouldn't they be awakening? He set his pattern in the sky, okay? And I shared with you, I said, there's a comet, it has the potential of being visible here over the next couple of weeks, potentially in the day. And it's going to come closest to the sun, and it's not sure if it's going to hit the sun. Guess what? On all days around April 4th or 5th, do we realize that that's Resurrection Day? April 1st is the Passover because it's a full moon. That's when they left the Exodus, on a full moon. And 3 days later, right, Jesus rose. And this comet is going to potentially, I'm not saying it is, it could strike the sun.
Mm.
There was a comet called Napoleon's Comet in 1811 that was visible in the night sky. When did the New Madrid earthquake start? December of 1811 into, okay.
It's so Napoleon. These would be signs in the sky, right? These would be signs in the sky.
Well, I think that's what you were talking about. And he said, there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars on heaven, distress and nations, perplexity. Okay. So there's always been signs. The question is, you know, are these signs lining up with the other events going on that it's potentially talking about? Mm. And there's war in heaven. The heavens are at war. That's part of this whole Olivet discourse that's covered in three of the four Gospels. John does not talk about the Olivet discourse. The others do. And you have to read each one, put them side by side, because they're all telling you something.
And so, Craig, again, the bone I'm picking on, it's always the same thing. How come this is not taught in our churches, folks? Why isn't this taught in our churches?
Well, do you think the devil would want you to know about it?
No, that's why the church is supposed to be exposing this stuff, right? Stephanie, our former pagan witch, God bless you, Stephanie, just text me. Are you listening? Here's what she said. She would know from experience. In the occult, fetishes and totems, statues can hold spirits. So can jewelry. So can natural stones. They can reside, spirits can reside in those items like a sleeping tick until the right meat suit touches it. Then they attach and oppress, and if done in ritual, can actually go into a person and possession. You understand? Do you see that illustration she just said? That these demons are like ticks. They're like ticks. And once they attach to you, wow.
Hey, Coach, Spencer, pull up the totem pole at the National Institute of Health.
This stuff's all right in front of us. We don't know anything about it.
The only reason, you know, I know that there's a totem pole in the National Institute of Health, because I walked it and prayed it, and I put rocks and staked it. I was like, what is a totem pole doing here on the National Institute of Health?
There it is, the third one on the bottom, second row.
Isn't that where Fauci and COVID and all the whole, you know, thing?
Spencer, right there in the middle. Dude, just hit that one, right? Second row down, second one in. Yeah. There's a totem pole.
It's the National Institute of Health.
Oh,
rural garden people go out and they have their lunch and everything like that.
Pharmakia, Paul. Look at them worshiping Pharmakia, National Institute of Health. George, come on in.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Coach. I wanted to say, when you see the shooting stars up in the sky, that's Michael and his angels warring with the demons. They can't get out either. When you turn the movies on, Paramount Productions, you see that mountain. That's Mount Hermon when God cast Satan and a third of the angels down. And there's the half circle. Nobody gets out of the firmament.
So they can't escape the firmament.
They can't. No.
The demons are trapped inside.
They're trapped inside too. Yep.
And so that's why they're looking. See, folks, they're looking for a meat suit, as Stephanie would say, to control, to be in. Once they get into a meat suit, now they've actually impacted the culture and society. And I wonder how many of those guys in Washington, D.C. got their meat suits filled with something that shouldn't be in there. And until we can become smart enough to look around and understand what we're dealing with is not politics, it's supernatural. We don't want to believe in the supernatural. We don't want to believe in it. The church doesn't even talk about it. Church will talk about heaven. Church will talk about hell. But the Bible says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers. And the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down stronghold. And we don't even know. We don't even know what that means. The average person going to church doesn't even know what that means. Could Joe Biden have been possessed by a demon? Could Kamala Harris been possessed by a demon? Could Donald Trump be possessed by a demon? They're out there. They can't leave. They're disembodied spirits. Hang on, Spencer. That would be a good one to look up real quick. Look, just type in disembodied spirit. And while the church is saying, well, we can't wait to get out of here, the devil's trying to take over. A disembodied spirit is an incorporeal supernatural entity or soul that exists without a physical body. What? Often described as a ghost, a phantom, or specter, these entities are characterized as immaterial, insubstantial, and sometimes capable of becoming visible or audible to humans. Common, though often folkloric or religious examples include spirits of the deceased, the angels, the vision, and demonic entities. This ain't a Christian website, folks. Huh? Disembodied spirits. See, they can't go to heaven. They're trapped. They're trapped until that final judgment day. They're trapped here. And so our battle is against spiritual wickedness in high places, not just some force, actually demons, disembodied spirits influencing Mitch McConnell, influencing George W. Bush, influencing whoever. Hey, influencing you. And then I hear people, we were talking yesterday about forgiveness and all that stuff. I'm going to tell you something, folks. A demon enters through unforgiveness. We do it to ourselves. That's why it says we're supposed to heap burning coals on our enemies. Why? What does that mean? Well, it means it just burns them to death when you aren't motivated by anger and fear and vengeance. When you do that to them, you just heap coals of fire on them. They know you ought to be pissed at them, and you're not. And they don't know what to do. Wow, I dug into it today, didn't I? And you know, I don't know the answer. I could get L.A. Marzulli on there. Type that in real quick, Spencer. I'm going to call him and get him in there. L.A. Marzulli. L.A. is a buddy of mine. He's told me over and over, Coach Dave, you're in Nephilim Central. Where's his website? That's not it. Keep going. You're in Nephilim Central, Coach Dave. Why are you surprised by all this stuff? You're in Nephilim Central. Those mounds all around you there, Coach. What do you think those are? That's where they buried those giants, Coach. All through. Wow. George, you want to get back in, or did you forget to take your hand down? People aren't talking.
No, I
didn't stand much here.
I do, Coach.
But hey, George, don't you dare fire hoses. We only got 7 minutes.
Okay, I won't. I wanted to just say that you can see that demon realm, and with Dysenian glass, D-Y-C-I-N-E-A-N, Dysenian, or the Vatican has an infrared telescope in Arizona and at the Vatican, and it's in infrared, so you can see the demon realm. That's what's going on. Dysenian glass. They took it away from us.
What's the name of it?
Dysenian glass.
Dysenian glass. Never heard of it. Hey, Spencer, I'm sending
you. That's why you haven't heard of it, because they don't want you to know about it.
No, they don't want you.
Glass and the demon realm. You can see the demon realm, and you can also see it through the Vatican's telescope. That's an infrared. Oh, because listen, in the Vietnam War, when they came out with infrared vision, it was in, or night vision, it was in infrared, and the Hueys, the helicopters, they see the demons, and the demons lock in them. They can see us. So they're yang, trying to shoot the demons down. They're shooting down the other Hueys. That's why it's in green now in the movies. All of it's in green. When it was in red, you could see the demon realm, and the Hueys were shooting each other down. That's what's going on.
See, here's the problem, folks.
Yeah.
The demons can see us. We can't see them.
Unless we have Dysenian glass. Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you.
So, George, give me some. Now, maybe I don't want to see the Dysenian. Maybe I don't want to see the demons. Hey, Spencer, Mark Trump just sent me this, folks, real quickly. Thanks, Mark, by the way. I'm sending you another one to Spence. Mark, was this AI? I don't know. It's probably AI. Mark's really into it. So the Nephilim are giants, angels, and forbidden knowledge. The mystery of the Nephilim Before the great flood, the Bible tells of mysterious giants called the Nephilim. And in those days, fallen angels who were sons of God saw the daughters of Lot and took them. They had children who grew up to be giants called Nephilim. Then it goes on and talks the story of the giants. The fallen angels called the watchers taught people secret knowledge that led to sin and rebellion. The watchers, these fallen angels, taught people wicked stuff. And because of that, the world became full of wickedness. And God saw that it wasn't very good. And so what did he do? He flooded the earth to get rid of these dudes. There's a warning. Noah warned the people, but they didn't listen. God sent the flood to destroy the wicked, but saved Noah and his family because they were faithful. As it was in days of Noah, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. It's going to happen again. The Nephilim show us that when we turn away from God, become proud, or try to use forbidden knowledge, we fall into sin. Boom. Throw the other one up there real quick, Spence. Hey, folks, remember, I'm not going to have an after show. As soon as this is over, as soon as it's over, I got to run. So Mark found these on AI. I don't know if you
can. Hey, Coach.
Yeah.
I created them during the show.
Are you kidding me?
No. No, while I was listening, I gathered information you shared, and I punched it into ChatGPT, Coach, and these came out.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it amazing?
It is unbelievable.
Totally crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Spencer, I don't know if we're a way you can put these in the chat for people. It's really unbelievable.
Yeah, I sent a link over to these two pictures you can put in chat if you want.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Man, I'm running out of time. Remember, I got to leave right after the show. Eileen, tell us your story, not your life story.
Thanks, Coach. I don't know if you mentioned it the other day, but this podcaster, Sean Ryan, millions and millions of, yes. And that priest, that exorcist priest, Ripperger.
I watched it, man. I watched it. It's unbelievable.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
4 hours at all about the demonic forces, AI, aliens, just encouraging, but so many people are watching it. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Why? Huh? Come on, man, because come on. They probably aren't talking about it in your church, though. Come on in, James, quickly.
Yeah, good show there. Ecclesiastes 1:9, the thing that has been it is that shall be, which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. So we're in this cycle. I mean, these things are still, they were there then, and now they're here, right?
It's because the spirit realm, friends, is real. It's real. We're flesh, right? Let me ask you a very simple question. Where did you come from? Where did I come from? You said, what are you talking about, Coach? Me. My mom and dad had sexual relations. My dad ejaculated a sperm. It connected with my mom, and I was formed. Where? From what? What was I formed? What do you mean I was formed? Formed from what? See, that's why they got to get away from, that's why they got to push and push and push and push evolution. Wouldn't you think if we want our children to be educated, well-rounded educated, wouldn't you think that in school they would teach one of the theories of where man came from was that God created him? Wouldn't you think that would be taught as an alternative? You can laugh at all those crazy people. They think God created us. But yet these kids are in a educational system which hides from them the evidence that the majority of people believe. Right? You understand the infiltration and how that's happened? Why wouldn't they teach the truth of creation as just a theory? They don't even talk about it as a theory. Wow. Wow. I got 1 minute, Craig. Hurry, it's yours.
Well, I'm affirming what George says, okay? Because when it says Jesus is coming in the clouds, it's not the white puffy clouds. It's the nebulas. The nebulas are space dust. You're made out of human dust. The spirit realm is made out of space dust. And when they are looking with that, and the reason that they put the James Webb up and they sent it off on Christmas Day, which is a pagan holiday, by the way, they're looking for Christ because they're going to fight. And it talks about the stars are going to fall from heaven. Who are stars? Their illumination, their fall, their light. They are angels. Every church in the book of Revelation had a star And it's,
okay,
it's,
Craig, it's I got to run. I challenge everybody out there to watch, take time to watch the links that we put in the chat today. Open your damn eyes and ask your pastor, why aren't you teaching us, pastor? Why aren't you teaching us this? We know why. Got to go. See you tomorrow.